What's up, heroes? Welcome to the Producer Life Podcast, episode 8. Today, we continue our conversation with Sean Naughton. If you missed the first half of this interview, please head over to producerlifepodcast.com and listen to episode 7. Sean is the head of A&R at the Producer Dojo and a chart-topping producer under the name Spiderhound. He's got over 20 years of experience in rock bands and studied under the talented Grammy Award-winning producer Charles Dye and is currently working closely with his mentor, Ill Gates. In this episode, Sean tells us about how moving his home studio changed the direction of his music career, how he met Ill Gates and got his start with the Producer Dojo, and how he's preparing for his live performances.
And he gave me feedback, like honest, critical feedback, which was new to me because in my other world, all I got was positive feedback, right?
Cue the intro music. We kind of jumped right into the production aspect, and you've mentioned Dylan Ill Gates, who you know has really been kind of a mentor for you, and now really a partner. I mean, you work closely with him in the Producer Dojo. Can you talk me through sort of how your relationship began there and where it is today?
Sure. So. You know, as I mentioned before, like I was in bands for years. So like for over a decade, I was in one band in particular. The band was called Yellow Dog. And, you know, we toured all around and it was great. We wrote, you know, hundreds of original songs together and it was an awesome time. It was an awesome part of my life. Creatively, it was amazing. You know, friendship wise, it was amazing. Experiential, it was awesome. You know, played so many live gigs, it's crazy. And you know, in a live setting, I was basically playing electric guitar and singing simultaneously. And it was all original music. So it was cool. It was kind of like a cross between like Radiohead and the Black Crowes, if you could imagine that. But but it was a lot of fun. But so it came to an end naturally because I had my my daughter, my firstborn, and interestingly, the other guitar player in the band, he was having his son at the same exact time. Like they were born like a month apart. So so basically when that happened, like we both became like focused full time dads, like new dads, like totally engrossed in being a new dad. And the band just kind of, it was just a natural ending. It was, there was no animosity. It ended on a high note. It was great. But we just kind of went our separate ways. And I was completely focused on being a new dad, which was all engrossing. And during that time, I didn't even open a DAW, which at the time the DAW was Pro Tools, which I used for 16 years. It became all engrossing. And probably when Emma was like 2 years old. So basically out of the infant stage and, you know, things kind of returned to normalcy. I really missed creating music. Like there was an emptiness in my life, like in the pit of my stomach, like it's just this emptiness. So the problem that I had was my studio was set up in the basement of the house. Right. And the basement is this dark place and it's away from everything. And because of that, you know, I never went down there because it's you know how much time we spend on music production. It can be hours, right? So I never went down there because it just felt like I was abandoning my family, going down to this dark studio for hours. So what happened was I just never went down there. And I finally pinpointed, I mean, it sounds obvious now, but at the time, I was like, you know, let me bring the studio upstairs to the main floor. It's nice and sunny. The family's always on the main floor. So then, like, when I'm producing, I won't feel like I'm abandoning the family. Like, I'll feel like I'm with the family. And that is totally changed the game. And it really, it worked. So I brought the studio upstairs. There's beautiful sunlight comes in. The family's there. And I feel a part of the family, even though they may think differently. Because I kind of go into my own world. But like, Brian, does it make sense? Like, just being able to see them and being on the same floor as them and hear them, like, I felt closer to them.
Yeah, and you felt like you weren't stealing time away from the family. That does make sense, and I can see how that would kind of cause a mental block. I know in my own case, I have trouble focusing with much distraction, and so I'm more of a type that likes to go down into that cave where I don't have anything else that's going to draw my attention away from what I'm doing. But you know, it's awesome that you figured out something that works for you and your family. Are there other ways that you involve your family in your music production?
So I don't force, my kids, because I know that doesn't work. Like, they have to want it. Right. So they've never like asked to be a part of what I'm doing, but they love music. So for example, like, they play the piano, the piano's in the living room. And so they're great. They sight read the piano. They play all different types of music. They love playing the piano. And that's their thing. They love listening to music. Like, I have all these playlists that they constantly want me to play for them. They love music. In terms of wanting to collaborate with me, that's not the case. Like, they have no desire to collaborate, at least at this point in their lives. I would love that. That would make me so happy. But it has to be their idea. You know what I mean?
You don't want to force it. But it certainly sounds like your musical interests have rubbed off on them.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, they're great piano players and they sight read. And they're very talented.
Yeah. So tell me the story of how Dylan and the Dojo entered the scene.
Yeah. So daughter's born 2 years, brought the studio upstairs. And so now I'm in the DAW all the time, except it was Pro Tools. And I was really frustrated with Pro Tools because although it's great for mixing and mastering and tracking bands and stuff like that, I really wanted to be producing electronic music because now the time was perfect for it. Like, I had loved electronic music since 1993. When I lived in England for a year and I was introduced to the rave scene, and really got heavy into electronic music starting in 1993, always loved it, but I was a rocker, right? So I was in rock bands. So, I never had the opportunity to produce it because I was too busy doing the rock thing. But now here I am, that the band's over, I've had my little hiatus from production, and now it's kind of like a rebirth. Now I can focus on electronic music production, like this passion that I've had, but have no idea how to create it, right? So I started looking at, like, I remember I was watching a Fortet video. I don't know if you've ever seen this thing on YouTube. I don't even know if they do it anymore, but it was like Beat the Clock. Like, you have to make a song in 10 minutes. Have you ever seen that?
I've seen I don't think I've seen Fortet, but I've seen certainly variations on that.
Yeah, I think it's called Against the Clock, right? And the whole premise is they set the clock at 10 minutes and basically you have to create a song in 10 minutes. At the time, like, I was totally in love with Fortet. That was my jam at the moment. And he was on this Beat the Clock thing or Against the Clock. And I saw him using this DAW. And I'm like, what the heck is that thing? In 10 minutes, he had created this amazing song. And I was like, I took screenshots of the thing. And then I figured out it was Ableton. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting Ableton because that was crazy. And so went all in, bought Ableton, and here I am now, stuck, totally confused, because I have no idea, like, I had no idea, what is this Ableton? I don't get it. It was session view, range view, like, what the hell's going on? I had no idea. I'm reading the manual, I was so confused, because I had, like, I was using Pro Tools for 16 years, and I totally was used to the Pro Tools functionality and workflow, and Ableton's very different, right? Maybe not the range view, but the session view concept, it was very different. So I was lost, and I didn't want to be lost. Like, I wanted to be proficient. So I was Googling every time I would Google Ableton, and look on YouTube, Ill Gates popped up. Ill Gates owned the Ableton training space at that time. And I devoured all his videos and, you know, joined his website. Like, so his website was like the version 1.0 of the website. It was pretty basic back then. And I joined his website, bought all his stuff. Like, he had like sample packs and racks and all sorts of stuff. Infinite drum rack, all sorts of performance templates, amazing videos explaining concepts. And, you know, I started to understand Ableton better. But I remember reaching out to him via email. Like, on his site, it had contact. And I sent him an email, and I was like, oh, hey, I made this song in Ableton. Like, what do you think? And he actually, like, replied back to me, which was a miracle, because, you know, any other artist that I admired, that I attempted to reach out to, I get no response, you know? He responded, and he was like, oh, I'm so, you know, it was like, it took him 2 weeks, but he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. It took me so long to get back to you. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm sorry. Like, thanks for replying. This is amazing. He's like, oh, you know, I listened to your song, and he gave me feedback, like honest, critical feedback, which was new to me. Because in my other world, all I got was positive feedback. Right. But that wasn't helpful. That didn't help me grow. So it was amazing. Like, it was very helpful. And fast forward to Patreon came out, and he created a Patreon site for Ill Gates. And on the site, there's tiering. So, like, you know, a dollar gets you this, $5 gets you this, $10, all the way up. And the top tier was one-on-one, monthly one-on-ones with Ill Gates. And when I saw this, I was like, it was this, like, everything stopped. It was like one of those moments in time where, like, everything stops and it just becomes crystal clear. Like, the light bulb goes off and it's like, oh, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. Like, this is the moment. I got to jump on this. And I did. I immediately jumped on it. I was like one of the first 12 students of his. And in Patreon, it was like me, Matter, Tesco, Moon Splatta, Mitch Brady, basically like the senseis. Like, now they're the senseis, but we were like the first 12 students of his on Patreon. And for 2 years, I had monthly one-on-ones with him, and it was amazing. It was transformative. You know, I would meet with him. He would basically tell me the things that I needed to focus on and fix and improve and develop on. And he would give me homework to do. And then in the course of that month, I would do all the homework and then meet with him again the next month and be like, here's all, I did all the things. What do you think? And then he'd give me more feedback and so on for 2 years. During that time, you know, he developed the EDM cookbook recipes, and share them with us, you know, the 12. And then all we did was EDM cookbook recipes, like over and over and over and over. Like, we just ramped them over and over. It was like hundreds of them. We did hundreds of them. Which is interesting, because now, like, to get a green belt, you only have to do them once. Like, you just have to do like one of each of the recipes. But back then, like, we just did the recipes over and over and over. And then what we did was, first you just do the recipes, And then when you get to the point where you've memorized the recipes, you don't need to look at them anymore. Then you turn them into a timer. And the first timer that you do is an hour timer. So then you do the recipes with an hour timer until you start beating the hour timer. And then you kick it up to a half hour timer. And then you do the recipes on the half hour timer until you don't need the recipes anymore. And then you basically transcend the recipes. And then you go off. And now you've got all the knowledge and the know-how and the tools to get you out of any roadblock. And you could just open up a blank Ableton and just go for it and use all that knowledge to get you out of any tight corner that you paint yourself into.
For the listeners of the podcast, can you describe what the EDM cookbook is and what you mean by recipes?
Sure. So Dylan developed these awesome. So working with us, the 12 from Patreon, he got a sense of what our development needs were, right? And basically, he decided to get his recipes down. So for example, there's a melodic buildup recipe. There's a loop menu recipe. There's a mud pie recipe. There's a sample based recipe, right? So like all the things that he does and has done over the years, he decided to put pen to paper and write like instructions. Like this is the recipe. Here are the ingredients to the recipe. Here's what you do. Just follow it, right? So very, very descriptive. So like, you know, step one, put an impact on bar one. You know, step two, put a riser going from bar one to bar nine. So basically a set of instructions that you just follow, right? And it's great because like every time you do the recipe, it's not like it sounds the same. It's different every time because you use different ingredients and you put your own spin on it and stuff like that. So yeah, he developed these recipes for us so that we can rep them, get really fast at doing them, because really the ultimate goal is, I mean, time is the most precious commodity in the world. It's not money. It's time, right? So, if you can get fast at music production, you could use your time better in the studio. You can then get to quantity, which will lead to quality. And then it's just this virtuous circle. Like, so instead of like spending a whole month finishing a song, which is what I was doing, spending a whole month finishing a song, which is bad times, very depressing, because you get too attached to it. And then you don't become a good critic of it because you're just so attached to the thing that you spent the whole month of your life on, right? But when you knock out a song in an hour, you're not attached to it because it was an hour. Like it's no big deal, right? Like I'll create another one tomorrow. And detachment is key because, you know, it helps you just get things done quickly. You don't have all these emotions tied up into the different elements that are in the song. So you can easily edit because, you know, you're not held back by like, oh God, I spent 4 hours creating this kick. I can't delete that kick. I spent 4 hours on it, you know? So basically that was his concept of the recipes, to get us fast at music production so that we can create a quantity of tunes, which he knew would lead to quality. And then we would be sitting on a mountain of songs, and then we can choose the best songs out of those mountains for releases.
Awesome. So after those two sort of formative years of feedback and massive quantities of production, what happened?
So during that time, he developed the concept for Producer Dojo, and it just grew. So the 12 became more than 12, like more people started joining the dojo, like hundreds of thousands, you know, thousands of people started joining the dojo. And then the class of 808 blew up. He developed the concept for the class of 808, which was basically kind of like the concept of the first 12, which, you know, is one-on-one training, except, you know, Dylan's not doing the one-on-one training because that's not scalable. Like he can't do one-on-one training for 400 people, you know? But what he did was he empowered the 12, me, Mitch Brady, Matter, Tesco, Moonsplata, et cetera, to be the teachers, which was amazing because I was terrified when he first told me that, because I was like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I can't teach. I'm still learning. I'm still learning. He's like, no. Like, this is the next level of learning. Like, when you have to teach, that's really when the learning goes exponential, because you have to be able to articulate these things to people in a way that they'll understand, and it will really solidify the learning in your brain. And I was just like, that's amazing. You know, thank you so much for the opportunity. This is incredible. He's built a huge community. He thinks of it as like a guild, like, you know, like we're all in it together. We'll all rise together. We'll all help each other rise and be one community together. And you know, his goal is to create 1,000 music careers, and he's already doing it. Like, if you think about the first 12, we're now senseis, and we're teaching his class of 808 members, and we're getting paid for it. He's building those 1,000 music careers one at a time. It's incredible. Like, never in a million years, when I, you know, first reach out to Dylan, did I ever think that I was going to be in a position where, you know, he was going to make me a teacher in his community, and I would be able to teach people the things that I wanted to learn, things that I was desperate to learn back then. It's been an amazing experience.
Yeah. For me, being a member of the dojo, I think the most valuable thing has been the feedback. And shout out to Trap Jesus for working with me over the last year. Your role has really expanded at the dojo. You're now the head of A&R. Can you explain what that means and sort of what you're doing in addition to mentoring the next generation of ninjas?
Yeah, so A&R is Artists and Repertoire. So I basically run the label for a producer dojo, and you know, it's part of the curriculum if you think about it. Like, so when the highest belt is black belt, and how you get black belt is you release your solo album on the label. So the label is different than other labels because, you know, we don't accept outside submissions. So the submissions have to come from within our community. So we're growing the artists on the label from within, which is awesome. But at the same time, it's a lot of work as well, because you can imagine, like, other big labels, the job is a little different, right, Brian? Because basically, when they start their work for the day, they look at the submissions, and these submissions are like fully professional, polished packages with artwork and mastered, and, like, you know, so they just, like, listen to it and be like, yeah, this is dope. Let's put this out, right? But it's like, you know, like, we are growing our community and teaching people how to produce electronic music. And, you know, a lot of the submissions, you know, they need a lot of work. They need a lot of coaching, a lot of feedback, a lot of back and forth in order to get it to the point where Dylan's going to approve it, because you know, he has very high standards. You know, he's not going to put something out on the label that doesn't he feels doesn't represent him or producer dojo well. So it's a little different. It's not just your typical A&R, because I need to coach people to get them to the finish line that is going to be a product that Dylan's going to approve.
Yeah, it's almost an A&R&D, artist and repertoire and development.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. It's coaching, it's development, it's A&R, it's all those things. Which is really interesting, because you know, it's all my passions. Like, it's all my passions in one, which is really cool.
So the dojo is only a couple of years old. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's only a couple of years old.
Two years or so. I would think in the long run, this strategy that I think is pretty unique to Producer Dojo, where you're developing and growing from within, would result in a lot more artist loyalty than you see at other labels. You know, short of long-term contracts, locking artists into a particular record label, you know, I would think there's a lot of personality and connections that are developed in the dojo where, you know, you guys will see artists stay with you a lot longer, not necessarily because of legal obligations, but because of, you know, liking the people that they're working with.
Yeah, we have an amazing community and, you know, some really incredible friendships developed through the Producer Dojo. And it's really inspiring to watch and see and be a part of. I've made great friends at the dojo. But believe it or not, if you think about it, you know, for our artists to truly grow, you know, they really need to get out there. They can't just release on the label. Because if you think about it, like if we have one artist release a month, so that's 12 a year. We got 400 class of 808 members. That, you know, I mean, the competition is pretty fierce to get into one of those slots, right? So I recently did a weekly download where weekly download is part of the dojo offering where, you know, Dylan each week teaches a topic. And, you know, it could be a technical topic like, oh, how to make sick basses or, you know, how to do this technical thing in Ableton, right? And there's like 150 of them. But the weekly, one week he was having technical difficulties and he called me up and he said, hey, Sean, I'm stuck. Like my equipment's not working. Would you be interested in doing the weekly download? And he's like, do you have any ideas? And I was like, yeah, I've got a great idea that I really want to do because, you know, it can be frustrating for people who want to release on the Producer Dojo label because, you know, there's only so many slots, right? And I decided to do my weekly download on self-releasing and staying motivated. I felt that this was important because a lot of great music comes my way and, you know, I wish we could release it all, but we just can't, right? So I don't like seeing people unhappy. And I know myself, once I dedicated myself to releasing a song a month, it's felt really good because I could see my audience growing. I could see my brand growing. I could get real-time feedback from people who are digging my music and stuff like that. Because it's very different, like when you create music and just keep it on your hard drive. It's kind of like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around, you know, it doesn't make a sound, right? But like when you get your music out there and people start reacting to it, it feels really good and it gives you a real sense of accomplishment. And, you know, I wanted people to be happy because they, you know, a lot of people set the goal where like, oh, I gotta get a dojo release, right? But they don't understand like how much work goes into that because it's very easy to get to 95%. But getting the last 5% is very challenging and it could be very frustrating. Because, you know, they'll submit and, you know, they'll have to edit and they'll submit again, have to edit again. And there's a lot of back and forth, to get it up to par with Dylan's approval. Right. And so I wanted to teach people like, you know, you should learn how to self-release your music. Because it'll keep you motivated. Because if you dedicate yourself to releasing a track a month, you're not going to sit on your butt. You're gonna stay very productive because you have to hit that goal, right? And you don't want to be releasing something that you can't be proud of, right? So it actually makes you work harder because you know that like that monthly release has to be a good representation of me, and So I in the weekly download, I taught people how to self-release their music and what strategies they should take and how they should get organized and how they should manage their projects and manage their time and set themselves up for success so that they could have a quantity of songs to choose from so that they can self-release a song a month and be proud of what they do. And not just be going for like the prize of the, you know, the dojo release.
Yeah. And you've got to keep a flow of music to your fans or you're going to lose all your fans. So you're releasing music, both self-releasing and on the dojo label as Spiderhound, which by the way, is one of the most amazingly search engine optimized DJ names I've ever run across. When I Google Spiderhound, like every hit on the first page of Google pertains to you, and that is really hard to do. So kudos.
Yeah, I lucked out with that one. Yeah,
what is the origin of Spiderhound?
Yeah, so, it was just the result of, like, when I was 20 years old, like, I was having a session with some friends, and, like, it was just, like, it was one of those things where, like, we just, I think there's a lot of drinks involved, but we just had the pens and papers out and we were just coming up with like the most absurd, ridiculous names for bands. Right. And, you know, we came up with lists of like thousands of different names. One name that I had that I gravitated towards was Mushroom Spiderhound. This thing that I came up with. And actually, the first iteration of my solo project back in 1999 was Mushroom Spiderhound. And so I did that. I can't even listen back to that music today. It's embarrassing. But whatever. We're not born great, and we're constantly getting better. When I had the rebirth in terms of, you know, when rock and roll ended and then I was starting afresh in Ableton and really pursuing electronic music, I decided to change Mushroom Spiderhound to Spiderhound to get rid of the mushroom part because it's just, it rolls off the tongue easier. It's less syllables and it seemed to work, and Dylan liked it. Like when I was telling him, he's like, "Oh, that's a cool name. It's really memorable. It's easy to say. It's great SEO. People remember it right away." Like I noticed that, like when I would say it to somebody, there must be something with the imagery, just like Spider Hound, and people just remember it. Like it's easy for them to remember. It's easy for them to say. It's easy to spell. So it just makes a listener's job easy. And it also creates the imagery in your head. Like, you know, you could think you see a spider, you see a hound, you put it all together. And it also, like, if you say it really fast, it's actually sound. I liked how it was S-O-U-N-D, sound, spider, hound. It all kind of like added up to me. It just felt like the right fit for me.
Awesome. Well, you seem to have really hit your stride with the music production, and you've taken on a real leadership role with the dojo. I understand one of your big goals this coming year is to start playing out more. What are you doing to prepare for that?
Yeah, so the Warper Party is really cool. So there's this party in Brooklyn called the Warper Party. They do it every month. DJ Shaky, she's in the dojo. She's been like managing that thing for like a decade or more. It's been around for a very long time. So that's, it's such a great community of people that just, get together and play original music original electronic music. The vibe is great. The people are great. It's a great opportunity to test your material, to see how people react to it and stuff like that. So that's a go-to that I'm going to try to get out to a lot more often. Recently I've been having conversations with promoters and stuff like that, like in Philly and Pennsylvania and other areas that they're interested in, you know, throwing some parties. So hopefully those conversations continue and, you know, maybe can lead to more shows and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm going to do that initially, but you know, definitely going to be still cranking out the music as much as I can.
You do a really good job laying out your goals and sort of making those public. I saw you had both a post on the Producer Dojo blog talking about your goals for 2019, but you even made some public commitments on Stick the other year. How did that work?
Yeah, that was cool. So Dylan and I, we were each other's accountability partners, and how Stick works is you over 52 weeks, you have to achieve your goals every week. They make you do a status report weekly. And if you don't, if you fall short on your goals, then you basically owe money to your accountability partner. So it's $10 a week. So it's $500. If you fucked up the whole year, if you screwed up the whole year, it's $500. So it's motivating because you don't want to lose the 10, you don't want to lose the $10. You don't want to let your accountability partner down. There's more eyes on you, right? So when you make a goal in private, in the privacy of your home, and nobody knows what the heck you're doing, it's very easy to slide. And then when you slide, there's no repercussion. But when you have an accountability partner and you put money down, the focus goes up amazingly, and you start looking at things differently. And you start achieving more. It's a psychological hack, really. I mean, it works. It definitely works.
Awesome. Good. What are the best places for people to connect with both Spiderhound and the dojo?
So for Spiderhound, I'm on all social media. Spiderhound on Spotify, SoundCloud, Instagram, all social media, Spiderhound. I have also a website, spiderhound.com, which could lead you to all the social media things. Producer Dojo, producerdojo.com, you could go and explore if you want to learn more, if you want to join the dojo. Definitely producerdojo.com is a good place to start. You can learn more about what we're about. And if you're interested in joining the weekly download, which is the entry tier, you could start there and get a vibe for, all of the information that we're providing producers, as well as products and giveaways and samples and a camaraderie community. On Facebook, we have a private Facebook group where there's thousands of members in there, and they're constantly conversing with each other, helping each other out. It's a great way to meet people, develop relationships and connections with like-minded people who love music production and all things electronic music. If you go to producerdojo.com, you can see all the information on how to join. And there's different tiers as well. The class of 808 is the top tier, where you would get one-on-one mentoring every month, one-on-one coaching every month, as well as access to everything in Dylan's vault, all his goodies, that he spent his whole life creating. Basically, he shares it with everybody.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being here with us. And you've given us a lot of good tips and things to think about. And I wish you the best of luck next year with your production and with your performances.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, heroes. Here are my takeaways from the interview. First, make sure that your studio works for your lifestyle. It's got to motivate you and empower you to produce. If it doesn't, then change something. Second, you got to have a mentor. For Spiderhound, that was Ill Gates. It has to be someone who will give you honest, experienced feedback. Third, when you're learning, try to recreate the arrangements of popular songs in your genres over and over until you really understand them. Then go break the rules. The goal is to build speed through repetition. Fourth, teach someone what you know. One of the best ways to learn something is to teach it back to someone else, which is part of the reason I'm doing this podcast. Finally, set annual goals and have an accountability partner to keep you on track. Also consider making your commitments public, even using a tool like stick.com. Thanks again for listening, and remember to check out the show notes at producerlifepodcast.com, episode 8. Also, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Thanks again so much. This is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.